You can meet and hear journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, LCMS President Matt Harrison, San Francisco Archbishop Salvatore Cordleone, Pastor Peter Bender of the Concordia Catechetical Academy, and Kyle Mann of the Babylon Bee at the 2023 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 16th and Saturday, June 17th at Concordia University, Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385.
This Easter, from our family to yours, we wish you health, hope, joy, and the peace of God, which passes all understanding.
Happy Easter, everyone. May the Lord bless you and keep you.
Of course, since that time, the Catholic universities have all become secularized. While the dogma of the Catholic Church has no sway in those institutions, the dogma of DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion, cannot be questioned.
The church year is just like the Apostles' Creed, stretched out over 365 days.
All of me matters to him. I can rejoice in his unbelievable love for all of me that he expressed when he died and rose. And he has saved us, rescued us, body and soul.
On-demand listeners of Issues Etc. love hearing sound theology while walking the dog.
We've had a little time to think. The American people have had a little time to calm down. Dobbs is now history. It's now law. Roe is now history in a different sense and is no longer law. So what has been the practical effect of the overturning of Roe v. Wade? Have lives been saved? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Wednesday afternoon, the 19th of April. We're going to talk about two new surveys on abortion. Dr. Michael New of the Charlotte Lozier Institute will be our guest. Then Terry Mattingly of Get Religion joins us to discuss church leaders, reporters, and the news. Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America. He's senior associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, Paige Comstock Cunningham Fellow with Americans United for Life, and a columnist for National Review Online. Dr. New, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
What can we learn from a recent Guttmacher Institute abortion survey?
Yeah, it's interesting. Every 7 years or so, the Guttmacher Institute does a survey of abortion patients. And this survey they released earlier this month looked at about 5,000 women who obtained abortions in either 2021 or 2022. And it's kind of useful for just looking at kind of the demographic data of women who are seeking abortions. And what we really saw was that trends are continuing. We saw a smaller percentage of abortions performed on teenagers. Sadly, we saw kind of a growing percentage of abortions performed on African-American women and Hispanic women. And there's also evidence that chemical abortions, as a share of all abortions, are increasing. According to the survey, over 54% of all abortions were chemical abortions. So we saw a lot of trends continuing.
Tell us about how Guttmacher's is classifying states now post-Dobbs.
Right, it's interesting. They split the results into two categories. They deem 24 states restrictive states. These are states that they view as either limiting abortion or kind of very likely to limit abortion in the near future. And 26 states they deem protective. These are states where abortion is legal and they expect abortion to stay legal. These are kind of rough groupings. I'm not sure that every state they deem restrictive is somebody going to pass a pro-life law in the near future. But it does create kind of a good way to compare the women in conservative states who are seeking abortions to the women from more quote-unquote liberal states who are seeking abortions.
What's the biggest difference between the so-called restrictive and the protective states?
Well, the big difference is namely how abortions are paid for. 42% of women from protective, or what I would call liberal states, who obtain an abortion pay for that abortion through their state Medicaid program. So that abortion was paid for with taxpayer dollars. Only less than 1% of the women from restrictive, or what I would say conservative states, less than 1% of those abortions were paid for by Medicaid. So you saw a big difference. Women from liberal states got their abortions paid for by Medicaid. Women from conservative states typically had to pay out of pocket or had to pay through private insurance. Another thing that was interesting was that women from more conservative states were much more likely, the percentage was nearly twice as high, to say that paying for their abortion was hard or difficult. So kind of efforts to go ahead and limit the ability of state Medicaid programs to pay for abortion, that does have a real impact. Some women don't get abortions because it's tough to pay for them.
How does the Guttmacher data show pro-lifers some future opportunities to protect the unborn?
It shows us kind of challenges and opportunities. I mean, one thing we've certainly done well at is with teenagers. Teen pregnancy numbers are down, and they're down quite a lot. I mean, I think they're down more than like 70% since the late 1980s. Teen abortion numbers are down a lot. So we've done well with minors and teenagers. We've really not done as well with African-Americans and Hispanics. In many surveys, including this one, we see an increasing fraction of abortions are performed on either racial minorities or ethnic minorities. We know that Planned Parenthood tragically targets this demographic, and I think it shows that pro-lifers need to step up our efforts and really just do more to engage abortion-minded Hispanic women and African-American women.
Another set of data came from the We Count Project. What did we learn there?
Sure. The We Count Project is trying to give us accurate information about the incidence of abortion since the Dobbs decision. And what they do is they compare abortion declines in states that passed protective pro-life laws, and they compare them to abortion increases in those states that really have not gone ahead and passed pro-life laws, or in some cases made their abortion policies even more permissive. And weighing these kind of in-state declines versus out-of-state increases, they've concluded that in the 6 months since Dobbs, there have been 32,000 fewer abortions. So that means the Dobbs decision has saved over 32,000 lives. So, you know, the hard work of pro-lifers is paying off. There are fewer abortions taking place, and more lives are being saved.
Why is that We Count data likely underreporting?
Yeah, I think it's more than 32,000. I think that's a low estimate for a couple reasons. First off, even prior to Dobbs, some strong pro-life laws were still in place. Oklahoma was enforcing a pro-life law. The Texas Heartbeat Act took effect September 1st, 2021. My research on Texas birth rates indicates that it was stopping about 1,000 abortions per month. So you can kind of tack 1,000 more lives saved to every month when you kind of look at that that We Count data. So let's say instead of 32,000, it's at least 38,000. I also think that some of the increases in kind of the more blue or liberal states aren't all being caused by women from conservative states getting abortions in these more liberal states. Some of the increase is just due to the upward trend. You know, we've seen the past few years, abortion numbers have been increasing in the U.S. due to, I think, largely more chemical abortions. Also, a lot of these blue states, they're making their abortion laws more permissive. Recently, we've seen Medicaid programs in Illinois and Maine. They started covering elective abortions. When that happens, abortion numbers increase. We've seen the parental involvement law in Illinois be repealed. We've seen the pro-life parental involvement law in Massachusetts be weakened. So all these things, I think, are leading to more abortions in blue states. It's not all just women from conservative states crossing state borders.
Let's turn to the subject of the FDA in court. Where does this case involving the FDA and the abortion drug mifepristone stand right now?
Well, timing is great because we just got some news about this like about an hour and a half ago. Just some background, I mean, there's been litigation about FDA approval of the chemical abortion pills. And in early April, Judge Kaczmarek, a federal judge in Texas, basically ruled that the FDA was wrong to approve the drug and revoked FDA approval. And, you know, he had some different reasons for that. One reason is that it was kind of fast-tracked, and the fast-track that was used should only be used for drugs that are life-saving. Pregnancy is typically not a life-threatening condition. He also argued that the proper safety protocols really weren't followed. So he revoked FDA approval of the judge of the chemical abortion pills. That was appealed to the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals. They restored access, but they held back some of the changes that were made. I mean, over time, the FDA did certain things to make the chemical abortion pill easier to get. They made the policy more permissive. So they restored some of the old rules. Namely, it can only be taken within 7 weeks of gestation and that there has to be an in-person medical exam. This is appealed to the Supreme Court. You know, they put a stay on the ruling. That stay was supposed to expire at 5 o'clock today. We just got notice that they've extended the stay, and there will very likely be a ruling on Friday. So we'll see what they do. They may revoke FDA approval for chemical abortion drugs. They may not revoke approval, but they may put some of the old rules back in to kind of increase the safeguards. We'll just have to wait till Friday to see.
The media are broadly claiming that mifepristone and other drugs like that are safe. Is that true?
No, I think the media is being very misleading here. There are very good studies from comprehensive health registries from like Finland, which shows that chemical abortion drugs have four times the complication rate of surgical abortions. There's also another good study using, again, comprehensive data from the California State Medicaid program, show the same thing. Chemical abortion drugs having at four times the complication rate as surgical abortions. So there are well-known studies that have used comprehensive data, not anecdotes, not small data sets, that really do show that these drugs do pose a very serious health risk to women.
How has the FDA, that you mentioned this a moment ago, but the FDA deregulating over the last couple decades, mifepristone, how has that actually made the drug less safe?
They've done several things. First of all, at one point, it could only be consumed within 7 weeks gestation. They've increased that to 10 weeks. You know, we know that the later mifepristone is taken in pregnancy, that increases the health risk quite a lot. So allowing women to take it up to 10 weeks, that's been a health risk increase. Then they also changed the rule saying that you didn't necessarily need a physician to administer the drug. It can be done by another health professional. That increases the risk. During the COVID pandemic, they ruled that women could obtain these drugs through the mail without an in-person medical exam. That increases the risk. And sadly, you know, the Biden administration, FDA, even after the pandemic, extended that rule. So even after the end of the COVID pandemic, women seeking chemical abortion drugs could obtain them through the mail and obtain them without an in-person medical exam. There's a lot of risk involved there. If a woman has an ectopic pregnancy, she takes a chemical abortion pill. That could be fatal. If she's further along in gestation than she realizes and takes a chemical abortion pill, that could have very negative, serious health consequences. So the FDA has done a lot to really deregulate this dangerous drug. I think it's put a lot of women at risk. I'm glad to see some legal action being taken that might put some of these safeguards back in place.
Tell us about a Charlotte Lozier study on the safety of chemical abortion. What did you guys discover?
Sure. It wasn't my study directly, but my colleagues did a good job. They obtained comprehensive Medicaid data from those 17 states whose Medicaid programs pay for elective abortions. So they had data on over 400,000 abortions going back to 2002. And they found that emergency room visit increases for chemical abortion pills increased by 500% between 2002 and 2015. So 500%, a woman in 2015 was five times as likely to have an emergency room visit after taking a chemical abortion pill than her counterpart was back in 2002. So we know they're risky, and this data shows that the risks are, in fact, increasing.
Finally, how do you expect the FDA case to proceed?
It's really hard to say. I mean, we do have a Supreme Court that I think seems very sympathetic to pro-life laws. You know, obviously, this is the same Supreme Court. Five of them struck down Roe v. Wade, and a sixth justice, John Roberts, even though he didn't overturn Roe v. Wade, did vote to uphold the Mississippi pro-life law. You know, I'm a little bit skeptical they're going to go all the way and just revoke FDA approval of chemical abortion pills, but I think there is a pretty good chance they are going to put some of the old safeguards back in place.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor of social research and political science at the Catholic University of America, senior associate scholar for the Charlotte Lozier Institute, Paige Comstock Cunningham Fellow with Americans United for Life, and a columnist for National Review Online. You can read his columns on the Talk On Demand archives page at issuesetc.org. Dr. New, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Terry Mattingly joins us on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about church leaders, reporters, and the news. He is founder and editor of Get Religion.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
The The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life, His design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministry sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.
Defending life from beginning to end. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Memoria Press is a family-run publisher of classical Christian education materials for homeschools and private schools. Every page of the Memoria Press curriculum leads students to a mastery of content, an understanding of the classical heritage of the Christian West, and an appreciation of truth, goodness, and beauty. If you're interested in learning more, visit memoriapress.com and use the coupon code LPR23. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time. memoriapress.com.
Thanks to our beloved on-demand listeners, Issues Etc. consistently ranks among the top podcasts in religion and spirituality. You can help us climb the charts by subscribing, rating, and reviewing Issues Etc. Type Issues Etc. in your podcast provider, hit the subscription button, and leave us a 5-star review. This will make it easier for podcast listeners to find Issues Etc. Help us cast Christ's net on the internet. Subscribe, rate, and review Issues Etc. today.